Hundreds of ICE agents raided several food processing plants across Mississippi yesterday.
It's the largest immigration raid in a decade. What will happen to the 680 workers now in detention?
I'm Rachel Martin, along with David Greene, and this is Up First from NPR News.
In Ohio yesterday, President Trump faced new calls for gun reform.
Republicans are indicating support for so-called red flag legislation that would get guns out of the hands of people deemed dangerous. Why are Democrats unsatisfied?
Plus, Puerto Rico swears in its third governor in just a week. Has the island moved past the worst of its political turmoil? Stay with us. We'll guide you through this day's news.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp, online counseling by licensed professional counselors specializing in issues including depression, stress, and anxiety. Visit BetterHelp.com/UpFirst to learn more and get 10% off your first month. Support for Up First also comes from Honest, striving to make better-for-you products. When you choose an Honest beverage, money goes to fair trade certified suppliers to help support their communities. Visit honesttea.com/podcast to learn more.
When President Trump landed in Dayton, Ohio yesterday, he was met by protesters chanting two words.
Do something! Do something!
Do something. Those were the same words Ohio's Republican Governor Mike DeWine heard when he spoke at a vigil earlier this week. And since then, DeWine has proposed new gun control legislation calling for a so-called red flag law and expanded background checks. Is there any chance we might see something similar to that in Washington?
NPR's lead political editor Domenico Montanaro has been following this and joins us this morning. Hi, Domenico.
Good morning.
So interest in this so-called red flag bill seems to at least be getting some traction in Congress. Can you explain what it would be?
Well, these are technically called extreme risk laws or extreme risk protection orders. They allow for police to temporarily take guns away from some people when someone close to them reports that they see or hear something that strikes them in an odd way or wrong way. More than a dozen states have passed these kinds of laws in recent years. They've been shown to be effective, particularly at preventing suicides. It's something that's gotten a lot of attention from Republicans and Democrats of late, spearheaded in the Senate, particularly by Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina.
Right. So does Lindsey Graham have enough influence to convince the rest of his Republican colleagues to support it?
Well, you've heard it from a lot of people, and it's quite possible. We've actually seen movement with a couple Republicans who've now moved on wanting even more gun restrictions beyond just these red flag laws in recent days. Thinking of Mike Turner of Ohio, who represents the Dayton area, and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, for example, they've come out and said that they're now in favor of stricter gun restrictions, which is a real big about face, especially for Turner, who was endorsed by the National Rifle Association before his election in 2018. Of course, a couple of Republican congressmen doesn't make a majority. Universal background check legislation has already passed the Democratic-controlled House, too, so a couple congressmen doesn't make a difference there. The Senate's a different story. That's controlled by Republicans. Republican leader Mitch McConnell shown no interest in bringing forward anything on stricter gun restrictions. But you have to wonder if Republicans aren't quite feeling the same kind of pressure they had in recent years, given that the National Rifle Association has had so many internal problems we've heard so much about.
What's the Democratic 2020 field saying about this debate in this moment?
Well, Democrats have been laying blame at the feet of President Trump. They say that his rhetoric is dangerous and inspiring these kinds of acts, especially what we saw in El Paso with the anti-immigrant screed that we saw so much evidence for from the shooter. In fact, here was former Vice President Joe Biden delivering a major speech about exactly that.
This president has fanned the flames of white supremacy in this nation. His low energy, vacant-eyed mouthing of the words written for him, condemning white supremacists this week, I don't believe fooled anyone at home or abroad.
And plenty of Democratic candidates have gone even further than that and are itching to say so.
NPR's lead political editor, Domenico Montanaro, thanks.
You're welcome.
Puerto Rico has sworn in its third governor in the span of just a week.
Yeah, it's amazing. Wanda Vasquez, who was previously the island's Secretary of Justice, was sworn into office last night, despite the fact that she said she had no interest in this role just a week ago. So her appointment comes after Puerto Rico's Supreme Court ruled that her predecessor, Pedro Pierluisi, was unconstitutionally sworn in as governor last week. And this political crisis in Puerto Rico, we should remember, comes after weeks of demonstrations that forced Governor Ricardo Rosselló to resign.
Okay, we've got NPR's Adrian Florido in San Juan to explain what exactly is going on. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Rachel.
So, Wanda Vasquez, she is now the governor of Puerto Rico. But as David noted, initially, when it was clear that Ricardo Rosselló was going to have to leave, she had said she didn't want this job. So why did she change her mind?
Well, Puerto Rico's constitution says that the person who replaces a resigning governor is the Secretary of State. But that post was vacant last week, and so the next in line is the Justice Secretary. That would be Wanda Vasquez. And like you said, she didn't want the job, so she asked Governor Rosselló to appoint a Secretary of State so that that person could take over when he stepped down. Rosselló did that. He appointed veteran politician Pedro Pierluisi, and when he stepped down last Friday, Pierluisi took the oath of office. But yesterday, the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, you were never confirmed as Secretary of State by the legislature, as the Constitution requires, so you can't be governor. And so he had to step down, and Wanda Vasquez became governor yesterday.
So, I mean, what are Puerto Ricans making of all this?
I mean, it's been quite a couple of weeks here with people's heads just spinning at all of the sort of twists and turns that all this has taken. You know, it all started a few weeks ago with these massive protests that you mentioned against Governor Ricardo Rosselló that were at first about these offensive text messages that he sent, but eventually sort of evolved into protests against what a lot of Puerto Ricans view as a corrupt political establishment. And they view Rosselló as part of that establishment, his successor, Pedro Pierluisi, as part of that establishment. And now, Governor Wanda Vasquez, they also view as part of that establishment. So yesterday, I spoke with a protester who went to the governor's mansion to demand that Wanda Vasquez resign. Listen to what Yanira Arias said.
El pueblo les está diciendo que está cansado de que no haya un liderazgo real.
She's saying people are tired of leaders who haven't been able to address problems like Puerto Rico's economic crisis that's forced so many people to leave the island, its high rates of poverty, its debt crisis. And so they look at people like Wanda Vasquez, who has close ties to Rosselló, and they aren't happy and they want something new.
So based on what you're saying, it doesn't sound like Wanda Vasquez is going to be long for this job.
Well, you know, there were questions about whether she might assume the office and then appoint a Secretary of State and resign. But she went on public television late last night to give her first address as governor and didn't give any indication that she would be resigning. It sounded like she expected to fulfill the rest of the term. There's a possibility that something might happen because it's been impossible to predict anything in the last few weeks.
Right.
So I'll keep an eye on it.
Who knows? NPR's Adrian Florido is covering all the twists and turns in Puerto Rico. We appreciate it. Adrian. U.S. Immigration and Customs agents carried out the largest statewide workplace enforcement operation in U.S. history yesterday.
Yeah, we're talking about a highly coordinated sting here. Hundreds of agents surrounded seven food processing plants across Mississippi. About 680 workers, the majority of them Latino, were arrested and transported to a military hangar. In addition to the arrests, agents also seized business records. At a press conference yesterday, Mike Hurst, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Mississippi, had this to say about the operation.
But while we do welcome folks from other countries, they have to follow our laws. They have to abide by our rules. They have to come here legally, or they shouldn't come here at all.
Jeff Almy of the Associated Press was the first to break this story and is on the line with us this morning. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
What other details can you share about how these raids went down?
Well, ICE and federal prosecutors told us yesterday afternoon that they had been investigating these companies for more than a year after they got tips that they were employing people who didn't have authorization to work in the United States. Mm-hmm. The agents fanned out before 8 o'clock in the morning. They surrounded these plants, detained people who they thought didn't have authorization. They zip-tied their hands behind their backs and loaded them on buses and took them to the Air National Guard hangar that adjoins the Jackson Airport. They had a very large operation set up inside the hangar. ICE invited the Associated Press in for a look before folks started arriving. They had 7 lines, one for each raid, to process people with fingerprint scanners and printers for documents. Hmm. They had fans with misters going to try to keep the hangar cool on what had been predicted to be the hottest day of the year so far in Jackson.
You mentioned that the officials, ICE agents, detained people they believed to be in the country working without proper documentation. I mean, presumably they would have some kind of evidence to demonstrate that, right? Or is there a chance that they swept up people who do have authorization?
That's unclear to me, honestly. We're hoping that some of this is going to become a little clearer today. Supposedly, we're going to get some figures on who was arrested and who might have been let go. Their position was that they brought in what they called foreign nationals subject to arrest. And they said that they questioned people out at the plants and that they only brought in people who admitted that they were not from the United States and that they believed were in the country illegally.
Hmm. What does this mean for the companies? This has affected 4 different food processing plants, chicken processing facilities, is that right?
Five companies operating a total of 7 facilities.
So do they stay open?
Presumably they're going to stay open. The company that had the most facilities raided, a company called Pico, which is based in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, said that it was facing a potential production disruption, but it was unclear what they really meant by that, whether that was a day or a week or something longer than that.
Or, I mean, the other question, do they get fined? I mean, for employing people who aren't legal to work in the country.
Federal prosecutors and ICE said that they were investigating the companies for potential criminal violations. They wouldn't go any farther than that. And so that's yet to be seen.
Okay. Meanwhile, all these people are waiting in this military hangar to find out what their fate is. Jeff Ami with the Associated Press, we appreciate you sharing your reporting.
Thank you.
And that is Up First for this Thursday, August 8th. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm David Green. Start your day with us back here tomorrow. And we know that the news does not stop when this podcast is over. So we're on Twitter. You can follow us at Up First and get a daily roundup of the most important stories of the day.
And if you want more NPR news, and who doesn't, there's a radio show for that very thing. It is called Morning Edition, and you can find it on your NPR station at stations.npr.org. And while you're at it, for podcast, local news, and the latest headlines, take NPR everywhere you go. With the NPR One app, you can find it at your app store.
It has already been an eventful summer in politics.
Yeah, between the 2020 debates and the president's battle over immigration, there's a lot going on.
And when there's news you need to know about, the NPR Politics podcast is there to tell you what happened.
Not to mention, we're hitting the road so you can meet all of the 2020 contenders.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
The NPR Politics podcast.
Subscribe!